Hello and welcome to episode 91 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty excited.
Me too. We are back again. We are back with a very much anticipated movie for the show. We talked about it last week, of course.
We finally watched it.
Yeah, after that awesome trailer, we hoped that the movie would deliver. And I'm hoping that you guys have already gone and checked this one out, because I know this has been getting a lot of buzz sort of around the internet and that for genre film fans. And of course, this is A Quiet Place. So we'll be discussing about all of that in all of its glory very, very soon. But first, there's a little bit of news. Some of this is fairly interesting as well. It's been very light on the news recently, to the point where I don't think we had any last week. But there's a couple here.
Hey, we still had that Three from Hell news, don't you worry.
Oh yeah, you'll always get that. I'm sure Rob Zombie will make sure of it.
He's drip feeding us that cast list.
But this first one, we finally got our sort of first proper look of the upcoming Purge movie. We had like teaser trailers before, and a few like teaser posters, and we knew that it was coming this July. But this is like
which I did not believe until we got a trailer for it.
Yeah, because it seemed very quiet about this one, and obviously there's the TV show coming and all of this different stuff. So it felt like this was going to get delayed, didn't it? But apparently not. They're sticking with their July 4th release date. It's worked for the last few movies, and the first Purge gets his first trailer. I mean, what did you think of the trailer for this one?
I think I felt like I feel with every Purge movie with this trailer. Like, some of it was interesting, some of it looked like cool Purge stuff, and some of it looked like annoying political propaganda that I don't really want in my horror movie. So it's a real mixture of the two, really. You know, the Purge franchise has never lived up to the premise of the Purge for me. And I was hoping with the first Purge it might. I feel like it's going to be much of the same. Still an enjoyable movie, but you know, not 100% what I want.
Definitely, I agree. I think that I really like the first Purge movie, and I think as more time's gone on, I think that movie really does stand out. We've kind of had the last two now that are very much the same movie. They follow that same blueprint, and I enjoyed the third one. What was it? Election Year was the third one. I thought that was a better movie than the one that had preceded it. It was just, you know, it followed the exact same blueprint. They just pulled it off better. Coming off that one, I was like, oh, I hope they take it in a different direction. And to hear that it was like the first Purge and all this stuff, that got me excited. But then to see what this movie is again tonally, it's a lot of dark streets at night, a lot of people in cars driving around, you know, very tonally sticking to that exact same blueprint of the
lots of people with semi-automatic weapons.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm just like, oh, they're doing this again. And like you say, there's hints of interesting stuff in this trailer. Like, I like that they touched upon something that they've referenced before in the franchise about how, like, people were reluctant to begin the killing in the first Purge, so they kind of send out these government officials to get it going, sort of disguised as pedestrians.
I really don't like that part of the pedestrian thing, because I really like the idea they showed like a party of like this just like crazy party, and I could just imagine like that going out of control. And be, you know, because suddenly, like, oh, you know, you can go a bit more extreme and a bit more extreme, and then someone gets killed, and then suddenly it's carnage, you know. And I thought, like, that would have been more interesting to watch than, like, the government sending in a load of dudes with weapons, and then there's a gunfight. But we'll see.
Yeah, because, it just looks like another action movie. So, I don't know, it is a weird one. I'm definitely more excited for the TV show, because I think a TV show, you get more time to create characters, and I think that's what this sort of franchise needs at this point. I'm curious to see it. I'm always curious about Purge movies, because like you say, great, fantastic concept. So
and I'm always excited to watch one of these things. I don't hate the movies. They're just not as good as what I want them to be.
This next one is interesting, because I remember we talked about this off air, kind of the what's going on with the next Terminator movie, because we hadn't really talked about it on the show, but of course Arnold Schwarzenegger had open heart surgery very recently.
Get well soon, Arnie.
Exactly, and kind of I'd said to you, like, this must disrupt the schedule, because I remember hearing
and
that they
it
were gonna
did.
Yeah, they were gonna start filming very, very soon on this one. Of course, this one did originally have a July 2019 release date for next year. They've now pushed it back to November 2019. Has to be obviously to do with what's happened with Arnie, giving him some time to recover. But yeah, you know, like I say, it's still coming. I'm still excited. I don't know. Did we talk about the whole Mackenzie Davis getting cast in this movie?
No, I don't think so.
So basically, again, apologies if we've already gone over this on the show, but they were talking about how they wanted a new female lead for the franchise. You know, obviously, Linda Hamilton's character is in this film, but obviously, yeah, her and Arnie are going to play very small, minor roles. But they wanted that new, like, female badass, and yeah, Mackenzie Davis has been cast as that role.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, she's obviously a fantastic actress, and I was very, very happy with that news. So yeah, like I say, we're still miles away from this one, so just a little update. Of course, we had to mention the Terminator news there.
Yeah, definitely.
And so this next one is interesting one, because this was kind of like an announcement and a release date that they are going to be making a new Grudge movie.
Because the Ring movie was so good.
Exactly. They were like, what other, you know, franchises have we got? So this one's coming out August 2019, supposedly. Though this feels like a January movie already.
Yeah, they'll realize it's trash and they'll push it to January.
Yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar in it, yeah.
Well, you can kind of read whatever about what this type of movie is going to be, because they've already cast Insidious lead Lin Shaye in this movie.
Fucking hell.
And that pretty much tells you everything. What is this going to be? This is clearly going to be your knockoff, a knockoff in Insidious, let alone a knockoff of the good ones of these movies. Yeah.
I really hope Lee Whannell writes and stars in this movie.
Me too, and I really hope he does some really creepy stuff.
He can cast himself as a questionably older man that tries to date a questionably younger woman.
Oh man, that's a great concept for a movie. I've never seen him do that role before. I'm sure he would absolutely smash it out of the park. So yeah, there's that one. Look forward to that. Hopefully we won't have to talk about that for
as we are, guys.
Yeah, cool. You can feel the excitement for that one. This last one is just a cool little nod to by far one of our favorite movies of, I would say, the last 10 years. Evil Dead, of course, Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead. It just became five. It's a five-year anniversary for this movie. And
my God.
He's kind of been looking back on this on Twitter, so definitely follow him on Twitter if you don't already. But he's been tweeting a bunch of sort of unreleased behind-the-scenes photos of this production, mostly centered upon the finale, and without going into spoilers, but it is a very bloody finale. And he kind of goes into he goes into sort of how they made that film, which is really, really cool. So yeah, it was really nice to see, really good to reminisce and really think about just how goddamn awesome that movie is. Yeah, it's insanely good.
shame that guy hasn't done anything else since then.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, like you say, obviously he's followed that up with arguably an even better movie. I don't know, that's an interesting conversation to have.
Ooh, that's for a different day, bro.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, we need this guy still in the horror genre. Hopefully he's gonna hear our call and knows how loved he is by the horror fans, because yeah, this guy is 2-2 right now. So yeah, this was really cool to see. Like, I just love Evil Dead, and I love the fact that this can still exist alongside what we have in Ash vs. Evil Dead.
No one knows that Ash vs. Evil Dead exists. Like, one day, someone who owns that television channel is gonna like turn it on and be like,
"Yeah,
dude, what's going on? Yeah. Like, we can't show this, and it's just gonna get pulled mid-season. Like, yeah. I guarantee we're not gonna get a season finale. It's just gonna end like episode 8, done."
It was funny because I saw a poll on Twitter. I can't remember who posted it now, but it was basically saying, like, what would you want more? Would you want a sequel to Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead? So, you know, Fede Alvarez to do Evil Dead 2. Would you want kind of a continuation of the film? So Evil Dead 4/ Army of Darkness 2. Or would you want a fourth season of Ash vs. Evil Dead? Which, you know, there's one of those options that I can immediately throw out. For me personally, I have no interest in it. Evil Dead 4/ Army of Darkness 2. But to make me choose between another season of my favorite TV show or a sequel to probably my favorite horror movie of the last 5 years, like, I can't make that distinction. I don't know about you, but I just think that's ridiculous to choose. Like, yeah, they're so different, aren't they?
I think if I had to, I think I'd go Fede sequel.
I think I would as well, because like I say, I'm so happy that we've got three incredible seasons of Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Whereas I still think absolutely that Fede needs to return to that world. Like, we deserve to get an Evil Dead 2 with those characters.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that was the last sort of normal news story. That was a pretty fun one. Of course, we have to give you the update of this week's Super Horror Bros Hype Train weekly update. It starts with a very fun one, one that we've already been discussing because it makes us very excited. But Danny Trejo is back. which is great. So Rondo, of course, in The Devil's Rejects, him and DDP were kind of the two vigilante characters. And
what was he called in Devil's Rejects? Just Rondo. DDP.
Oh, DDP. I can't remember DDP's name. It's weird because I did watch Devil's Rejects about 2 days ago. But he's DDP to me. He'll always be DDP. This is awesome news, and I really, really hope DDP gets confirmed, because you have to have these two guys together. We've been talking about, but they really are starting. You know, the list of people that survived Devil's Rejects that aren't been cast.
Billy Ray Snapper.
It's a very very small list. Is that DDP, is it?
Yeah.
Billy Ray Snapper, Christ.
Gotta love Rob Zombie.
Yeah, he knows how to name characters. But yeah, like you say, there really isn't many people now, especially people from Devils, let alone people from just any previous Rob Zombie movie that haven't been confirmed. of course, it wouldn't be a weekly update if we didn't confirm someone from 31 joining the cast. This week it is the turn of Sickhead.
Which is not the one we want.
It is Pancho Mola, who's kind of one of the leads in the sort of the first half of the movie, gets a lot of screen time in that movie. Really interesting to see what he will play in this film. Where is his place in this world? Because we're already seeing a lot of villains, especially, already been casted. You know, they're going to need a body count in this movie. They're going to need people to kill. So it's going to be interesting to see where these sort of people line up. Another couple of announcements, people that aren't massively sort of known for Rob Zombie, but Richard Edison and Richard Reel, so a pair of Richards, both confirmed. I think Richard Reel was in Halloween 2, and I think that's his only sort of Rob Zombie previous movie. And I'm not sure if Edison has been in any of his previous movies, but they're both kind of, like you say, similar to, who did we say the other week? Clint Howard, one of those guys that, like, oh yeah, they're in a lot of genre movies. And they're definitely people that you'll recognize. That's all for the cast announcement so far. Obviously, Rob Zombie's drip feeding them out.
We'll get what we want eventually.
It's interesting. We'll have to look back on kind of when this movie was first announced, because, I mean, what was it? Are we going on maybe 3 or 4 weeks at this point?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think it was like mid-March, and so these productions aren't going to be very long. You know, I'd be shocked if this production is more than 6 weeks. So I feel like we are going to get like the full cast list very soon. If not, we're getting very close to that.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, these guys come on set, get killed by the fireflies, and head off out. You know, and it's just kind of like get a picture of Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
Get posted on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So there it is. That is our news and hype train update. I think we can't delay the inevitable anymore. This is a very exciting episode. We need to talk about A Quiet Place.
Let's do it.
So, A Quiet Place is finally here. After all the hype and anticipation, we have finally seen this movie.
It's been a long while coming.
I know. It kind of, from the start of the year...
I don't know when we saw this trailer. Like, was it just at the start of the year? It feels like longer.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm sure it was, because I hadn't heard of this movie, and it was one of the ones that you kind of had in your list.
Mm.
And, you know, you told the concept to me before I'd even kind of visualized it in my mind, and... It was immediately something that I was drawn to, and of course, seeing the trailer, it kind of perfectly matched up in my mind with what I wanted that concept to be, you know, the whole make a sound and you die concept, and yeah, they obviously nailed it in that first trailer.
I did it, guys. Mike's upcoming horror movie list is finally delivered. It's finally done it.
It did give us such gems like Keep Watching and Hellraiser Judgment. But, you know, you got to give them credit when they give you the Quiet Place.
exactly. You know, I'll take that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is so much to dive in with this movie. You know, it's the use of sound, the acting, so many different things. I mean, where do you even want to start with this one? Should we try and
I'm going to synopsize this little movie.
Let's go for it.
Yeah. I mean, slight Mike buzzword straight away with this film. Mm. This is a post-apocalyptic movie.
Oh, yes.
Basically, the world has succumbed to these monsters. If you have ever watched the film Cloverfield, they're very similar to the little monsters that come out of Cloverfield. Mm. The world has succumbed to these. These creatures hunt by sound. So we, interestingly, with this movie, we join the movie after this has happened, after the invasion's happened, and it's kind of, we're introduced to survivors of this outbreak where there's very scarce kind of humanity is on the brink of extinction. We're introduced to the Abbott family. And we're basically introduced to them, and they, their daughter Regan is deaf, so they all are able to sign language, and they're all basically communicating via sign language and trying to live in this world, basically, with these creatures. So we learn the rules kind of fairly early on, 2 or 3 minutes into the movie, that, you know, any noise that you make, that this, it doesn't have to be anything significant, just anything that's kind of out of the norm and kind of, you know, relatively loud, the creatures will hear, and they'll come from far away to then stalk and hunt and kill you. Which basically means from like that moment on, the movie is you know, you are listening to every sound that everyone is making throughout the entire movie. It makes the movie tense from, you know, minute 2 to minute 90 of this movie. I really don't want to go much more into it right now. We're certainly going to have to at some point. But I think there's a lot that we can talk about overview wise before we get into any spoilers, because I certainly don't want to get to that point just yet. So yeah, that's the movie. I mean, I think what I didn't mention is that the Abbott family parents are played by Emily Blunt and John Krasinski, who are husband and wife in real life. And John Krasinski maybe writes, I guess you'll get to that in a second, and directs this movie, more interestingly. And kind of it's his debut behind the camera. Do you want to kind of go into the writing side of things?
Yeah, well, I mean, he, you know, going into this movie, I was unclear on a lot of these different things, and obviously I didn't want to read about it until afterwards, and so then kind of seeing this movie and then being like, okay, now I can start to learn about the production and, you know, the casting and all these different things. And just a couple of interviews that I've read with John, he talks about a couple of things that I found really interesting when we kind of dive into this movie. But he talks about how he didn't ever see himself as like a horror guy at all. He, you know, he said that he couldn't watch them when he was younger because they scared him so much. And he basically was drawn to this script. So this script was kind of delivered to him as kind of the scripts that get shipped around Hollywood of like, here's a cool idea, but no one's really picking up on it. Is this something you're interested in? And, yeah, you know, the concept was there. The concept was post-apocalyptic. If you make a noise, these things are going to hunt you. And that was interesting to John. But the thing that he said that he really wanted to hunker down on and found interesting was this family dynamic. He said that he kind of, when he first read the script, I think he just had his second child, like, weeks prior.
Right.
And the kind of the want and will to protect your family was something that really resonated with him at that time. And he said that as soon as he read it, he felt that, you know, he saw himself and his wife in those characters, and that's why he immediately had to cast them both as the two lead roles.
Yeah, which is just, you know, the family kind of, you know, strength of looking after your family is what is at this movie's core, and what makes this movie so special. John plays the father called Lee, and Emily Blunt plays Evelyn. I think there's a point in the movie that Evelyn says, like, you know, who are we if we can't protect our children? Like, you know, if we can't protect them, then what are we even here for on this planet? And you just feel that, like, you know, that their sole purpose in this movie is to look after their children, and you kind of, it's so genuine and so well acted from the two of them that you feel that struggle from start to finish.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I just, you know, I think elevates this movie, you know, beyond horror, just to, you know, an all round movie for people to watch.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was one of the elements that just completely took me off guard when I watched it. You know, like, going into the trailer, we talked about last week, was like, if they deliver on this concept, this will be one of our favorite movies. And, you know, we haven't really talked about it, but they absolutely do that. They absolutely deliver on that use of sound. The fact that they managed to keep that tension, like you say, from the second minute of this movie until, boom, the credits hit. There isn't any lulls in action at all. Not even, action's not the right word, but you know what I mean? Like, there's no they don't change the rules at any point in the movie. It doesn't suddenly become, oh, here they are all talking and having this big loud conversation and here's this big fight scene. Like, that never happens in this movie. It stays true to what the movie's about throughout the entire movie. And that's something that you can almost, like, not really say about any film, really, where it's like, we're going to stick to this thing. This is the thing that this movie's about. And that's what we're going to tell throughout all of it. But then, like, on top of that, it's not just about this thing. It is, you know, the main thing about this movie taken away from it is this themes of parenthood.
Family bond. Yeah,
of wanting to protect your family. And, like you say, there's so many elements of why this works. And I think, obviously, one of the main elements is the acting of the lead two characters and their children. I think it's so well acted. Like, we've talked about it a lot recently, where we have been blessed with some really fantastic performances in these genre movies. Even this year alone, like, it's going to be insane when we try and decipher it at the end of the year. Because, you know, even just last week when we saw Unsane, I thought Claire Foy completely elevated that movie to another level, you know, had that movie not had such a strong lead performance. And then immediately going into this movie, I'm just like, holy cow, like, how did they manage to pull this off so well?
Yeah.
I believed every moment of this movie.
I think, like you say, the acting in this is almost next to none. But even with that happening, for me personally, I thought John was just standout in that role as the father figure. I thought, and perhaps that's, you know, being a father, I can kind of portray that onto him more. But, like, I could see the look in his eyes, and he aged. Like, this movie does span a bit of time, and, like, you can see how weathered he gets, and how his eyes just look shrunken, and how you can just see the weight of looking after this family has really, you know, hit him in the way he looks. Like, I don't know how he did it. Like, it's phenomenal. And that's not to take away from Emily Blunt either, because I think, you know, she is also, you know, next to none this year in terms of acting performances for this movie. I think both of them, and like you say, the children. But for me in particular, the way John kind of portrays that haggard, you know, like I say, that look of just kind of, you know, he's been battling this for so long to keep his children safe, and how that's kind of just wearing on the way he looks. I just thought it was phenomenal.
Definitely. I think that obviously, like, the two main things and the two things we've been talking about so far are those two elements, the kind of what this world is about. It's a post-apocalyptic, desolate world where, you know, sound plays a huge key. And then you combine that. That's kind of the backdrop to what is then essentially the main story of this family just trying to survive. And I think those two elements are combined so perfectly through what we get is the opening scene of this movie, without going into it too much. But it's what would you say, maybe 2 to 4 minutes long?
Less than 5 minutes.
It's a short scene, and it perfectly conveys this entire movie in a nutshell. Gives you the strong family bond. It gives you the will to survive. It perfectly explains how sound plays a role in this universe. You know, not everyone seeing this movie is going to know the trailer or know the exact concept. But if you just hear the good word of mouth, which thank God this movie is getting, like, if you just say, like, oh yeah, I hear that, you know, the Jim from The Office is in this movie and it's really cool, so I'm going to go check it out. You will know from the first 5 minutes exactly what this movie's about. And that is a really special thing. Like, it's not like other movies that we've seen where they have, like, unnecessary horror at the beginning.
And it is exactly that as well with the family. You instantly know that family dynamic. We don't need 15 minutes of setup for them pre the outbreak to establish their family bond and their role. You just get that instantly. You get the bond between the siblings and the parents, and the strong bond that the two parents have together in that small segment. You know, it reminds me a lot when people talk about, like, you know, like a tutorial in a video game, and how, like, Mario teaches you so well that you walk along, you fall down the hole, and then you know, straight after you do that, you have to jump over it. And it does it in a very quick way that's not boring for the person that's playing it. And that's like this with the film. Sometimes films have to give you screens of text to tell you, like, what is this world? You know, why are we here? What is the time span? Or you have to have 10 minutes of setup. This movie, just, you know, 2 minutes in, you 100% are acclimatized, and then you're just in it for the next 90 minutes, which is, you know, it can't be understated how in it you are for those 90 minutes. There was, like, a point that when we was watching this movie, because I think it's fair to say that we're both, you know, a little bit hot on this movie and enjoyed it. And there was a point that we're about half an hour into this movie, and I kind of like realized that I was just like sat forward with my mouth open, and I kind of just took like a step back in my seat and kind of like just like took it all in and was just like, this is just a special experience. And I kind of then took that stance for the rest of the movie, because quite often when I watch a movie like this, I'm worried about the delivery. You know, I'm worried, you know, we said before, can they deliver on this for 90 minutes? But after I got like 20 minutes in, I'm like, they're going to deliver on this. Yeah, this is going to be special. No, like, yeah, I'm just going to enjoy this experience now. I know they're going to nail it, and they nail it from start to finish. I think like the, you know, no spoilers at all, but like they escalate things in the kind of second act for the rest of the movie. And the way that they escalate things is so perfect, and it's such a curveball. And I'm so grateful that none of that is spoiled in the trailer. And the instant they introduce this kind of escalation, I'm just like, oh my God, like this is like just so crazy and perfect for this movie. And I just don't know how the hell this is going to go down. And it's just kind of, you know, it really just keeps you engaged for the entire movie. And like you say, even when there's, you know, not a lull, but like, you know, there aren't, you know, creatures in your face or anything like that. It's just kind of people talking. You've always got that sense of at any point, one of them could just make a mistake, make a noise. And then suddenly it's go time again. It's survival time again. You know, it's the even the world they've built is like, it's not, this movie is so based on this family and their struggle, but the actual, this post-apocalyptic world is one of the most kind of interesting post-apocalyptic worlds that we've seen. And we get like glimpses of like, you know, like the rest of humanity, and yeah, like, and I want to know more. Do you know what I mean? Like, I want more of that. And like, there's not nothing in this movie that they don't nail for me. Like, I like, if I was to try to critique it in any way, I don't have a critique of it.
Yeah.
Which is, I just can't think of a movie where I could say that, you know, a handful of times for the show, if that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is crazy. It's a rare movie, this is, where, like you say, I thought they were going to just deliver on this one thing of this use of sound, and that would have been enough for me. That would have been enough for this to be one of my favorite movies of the year. It would have been enough for it to just be a really enjoyable cinema experience. But the fact that they nail, like you say, all these perfect little things, you know, the hinting of what this world is about, you see kind of like newspaper headlines of kind of what happened when it first outbroke, and kind of people trying to, you know, discover like, oh, they hunt you by sound and all this stuff. And obviously there are hints at other people in this world, but I think we said, like, this isn't like a massive spoiler, but kind of when the end credits start, there's something like 6 credited characters in this entire movie.
Yeah, there's not many,
which is crazy. Like, that's so bizarre for a movie like this, but to keep your attention throughout the whole thing.
Yeah,
like that's almost unheard of. Obviously, the use of sound as well, like the kind of, it feels like a silent movie at times, and it's something that we just haven't really seen a modern movie take from at all, where the characters are either sign language or signing and whispering. And I thought that element was super good, because you can kind of hear what they're saying very faintly at times whilst they're signing, and that's something that
I didn't expect. Not enough without the subtitles to actually make it out. Like, it was the perfect level,
like you say, like one word or another where you'd hear like mother or love or something like that, and that was like enough to just draw you in. And like you say, like they perfectly know what they're doing with all these elements. That there's so many things that they throw in at the start that are perfectly brought back in the finale of this movie. Obviously, one thing that we've mentioned and kind of you see in the trailer, but one of the characters is deaf in this movie. One of their children, and obviously this plays a huge role, not only because of the fact that, you know, they know sign language because of this, and so that gives them like a huge advantage in this world. Which is something that, again, is such a clever element of like, why did this family survive and other families didn't? And that would be one of those reasons of like, well, they didn't have to just teach themselves, you know, sign language to kind of communicate, but also communicate quietly. Like, they already had this as like a one-up on the rest of the world. But then also you kind of, you get put in this character's shoes of every time you see, do you know her name off the top of your head?
Yeah, because I was going to mention it, that it's Regan, the girl, played by Millicent Simmons.
Yeah.
And she's actually deaf in real life.
Yeah. I remember that was something that was, I'd read beforehand, was that that was so key to John when he was cast in this movie, was that they wanted to have an actual deaf person play this role. And it's fascinating because, in the movie, you know, when you're kind of put in her shoes, the audio completely cuts.
You feel so isolated in that role, like, and naively, kind of like, when I kind of first saw her as a deaf character and kind of saw that, like, in this world that, like, silence, you know, you have to remain silent, I was like, oh, she's kind of like, you know, she's got the sign language and got the tools to help her. But ultimately, like, she is still so isolated in this world because when stuff's happening around her and, like, her family are unable to communicate with her or something, she doesn't have, like, that sense that suddenly is so heightened by the creatures, you know? So, like, you know, if she had a mobile phone in her pocket that was going off, you know, the creatures would be coming towards her and she'd have no idea of this, you know, trigger that she has on her person. And that element was, like, super interesting, and having that transition between her being completely silent and you being put into that role as the viewer, and then kind of be taken out and then kind of knowing what's going on around her and being fully aware that she's not aware of this is, you know, it was a really interesting juxtaposition that I think, you know, its use in the movie isn't overused, and whenever it's used to perfection. You know, it's either used in a super kind of emotional scene or a poignant scene, or in a you know, an action scene where it's necessary. And I think, you know, that was something that was done so well. Like, you know, we've obviously talked about it for a bit, but the use of sound in this movie is just perfect. Like, better than it needed to be, you know. We said it just needed to nail, you know, or not even nail, it just needed, you know, needed to get the concept right, or even nail it, but it went beyond that, you know. It went to almost perfection. You know, there were points in the movie where sound obviously happens, and it's almost perfect every time when it happens. And the use of sound and kind of, you know, like you say, the characters communicating, and you know, it creates, like, real beautiful moments, and creates kind of, like you say, it creates rules within the world that then are used to perfect effect later on as well. That just kind of, I think as well, being, like, in it audio-wise, puts you in the role so much more than, like, a point of view movie, or, you know, any, you know, hand cam movie or anything like that. Being in it with the audio, you 100% know the ramifications of what's happening. You know, you don't have to have, and it's not then reliant on, like, a jump scare in your face. You're just terrified because the noise has happened. And I think that's kind of, you know, it was interesting to see how they would deal with tension with this movie. And it's the most tense I've ever been in a cinema.
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, like, that is, we have to talk about our cinema experience because that is such a huge part of this movie. Like, going into it, that was something that I'm always nervous about when you see these movies with a big audience, is you don't know what type of crowd you're going to get. You know, we saw this on the day of release, and it was a fairly busy cinema. And kind of when it first started, I remember thinking, like, you know, you get the usual murmurs of when a movie's then starting. Kind of like, I'd say, like, the first 2 minutes of that opening scene was a little bit of people getting comfortable in their seats. Little bit of popcorn or drink action, and you had that a little bit, and it was super subtle, but it was enough to be like, if this is going on throughout the entire movie, it would maybe cause a bit of an issue. And from the second that opening scene ended, and then we get the kind of time jump to what, where the rest of this movie is, there was, like, not a peep out of anyone in this entire cinema. And, like, that adds so much tension to this movie again, because, like you say, you're in this room with a lot of people that want to cough, that want to clear their throat, that want to make noises, and you just can't, because you're like, I can't make a sound.
There wasn't even the normal coughing or, like you say, clearing your throat and anything. And I remember, like, when we watched Don't Breathe, we mentioned that people were so quiet during that screening because you're just so tense, because you're in the room with those characters trying not to be seen. But with that movie, you know, there were lulls where you could then, you know, kind of feel like you could make noise. Yeah. But this movie, you know, in the cinema, I honestly felt like, you know, there were times where I wanted to clear my throat, and like I had a coffee and I was like trying to so carefully drink it. I was like, I must not make a sound.
Yeah, and that's crazy. Like, that is one of this movie's biggest strengths. It's something that a lot of people have been talking about, and it really is a wild experience that, like, of, you can probably tell by now, but we definitely highly recommend this movie. And I think that it's absolutely one of these cases. You know, it's funny, when I talked about it Unsane last week, where I was like, oh yeah, you should definitely see Unsane because I very much enjoyed this movie, but the cinema experience added absolutely
nothing. It's like, oh, maybe just watch it on your phone.
Yeah, like I actually think watching that movie like on a laptop in the dark with like earphones in would probably actually enjoy that movie even more. This is the opposite. You need to see this on the biggest screen possible, and you need to see it with as many people as possible, and hopefully those people will respect this movie the way it deserves to be treated, and then you'll get a really magical experience unlike anything I've ever had in the cinema. It really is crazy. And obviously you mentioned Don't Breathe there. You know, that is definitely a movie that gets brought to mind with kind of the level of tension throughout this entire movie. This movie pulls from so many other different movies that I just didn't think it would at all. Kind of, we talked about the kind of family resonance of this movie, and it really hasn't affected me. A movie hasn't affected me like this since I watched Interstellar. And kind of the way that movie was viewed in the cinema, I think, again, the use of sound in that movie, complete opposite of this movie, where it's so loud and in your face and it's effective with its soundtrack, and this is the complete opposite. But both movies have this real emotional core that like just punch you in the face, and when it's over, I feel like I've just gone through an experience of like, God,
you feel that
to...
parental bond so strong for the between the characters.
It's really crazy. It really can't be like you know, overstated enough, really, like how crazy it is. You know, without, we're not going to get into spoilers really towards the end, but like there is a scene in this movie that hit me like a gut punch that like I wasn't expecting. I was expecting this movie to be like a fun thriller and take me on the roller coaster ride like a Don't Breathe, but there isn't any moment in that movie where I was like, you know, worried for a character's life or anything like that. It was just like, oh, I appreciate how fun and well crafted this movie is. Whereas this movie was like, I really genuinely cared about this family so much, which is ridiculous because it's ridiculous in the sense that obviously, you know, I'm an adult, I know how movies work, I know who the writer and directors are. You know, you shouldn't really get to the point where like
you're looking
really
at the screen, you're like, oh, it's John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. Like,
exactly. Yeah. I know that these aren't real people. I'm not watching a documentary, but for some, but it's the performance level.
Yeah, you get
caught
so up in the moment and the story.
Completely caught up in it. Where like you say, it's so easy to put yourself in those shoes and feel that emotion. And one of the final scenes of this movie was just heartbreaking, and I just found it so emotional watching it. That I really did tear up, and it's the first time, like, definitely I could say that for this show. Like, I haven't seen a genre movie that has affected me like that possibly ever. And what's crazy about this movie is that you don't get that sense of you don't get that chance to just like break down in a way of like, I felt so emotional in that moment. But because the movie's so tense and is still going a million miles an hour, you don't even get a chance to like calm down from it.
No, it almost like hit me when the final credits rolled.
That's what I was going to say. Like, because like,
I didn't want to get up and walk out the cinema yet. I didn't feel like I could. Like, I felt so emotional sat there. I was just like,
yeah, there was that moment. There was 10 or 15 minutes before the movie ended. And so that moment had hit me so hard that I was kind of like still processing that whilst enjoying the finale of this movie. And like you say, when the movie ended and the end credits rolled, I remember trying to talk to you and I just couldn't. Like, I couldn't formulate words because like I hadn't had that release yet of what had actually happened prior in the movie. And that is something, like you say, for me is completely unique. Like, I've seen thousands of movies and that's never happened to me. So that's, I could, like say, that is, I could not say anything better about this movie than that experience of what I had. Like say, I don't know if I'll ever have that again. I don't know if that's something that a lot of people have, but for me personally, seeing this movie for the first time, I will always remember that moment. And this movie is special.
I think for me as well, this movie is now like, if someone says to me like, oh, you like horror movies, what would you recommend? I'm like, Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Like, for someone that's like a normie, you know, quote unquote normie, like, this is one of the best films a avid horror movie fan will go watch this year or ever. And it's also a person that's just a casual movie fan that wants to watch a horror movie. I'm like, yeah, there is nothing in this that's going to be like, you know, too much for you or whatever. I mean, this movie's super tense and crazy tense and might make you feel a bit ill because of the tension, but, you know, it's not something where I could be like, oh yeah, Devil's Rejects, go watch that. You know, it's like, no, this movie straight up is for everyone to go watch. And like, I'm recommending it to anyone that will listen to me talk right now.
This is the type of movie that, like, for me, genre movies they don't get enough love, because this is as emotional as any movie you'll see all year. It's as well directed and as well acted as any film. And obviously, we're just coming off the back of the kind of the conversation with the Oscars and how great it was to see movies like Get Out get represented. For me, already seeing a movie like this, I'm like, the fact that it's a genre movie is going to like take it down a peg or two for so many people. And I just find that to be so ridiculous, because this, the emotional core of this movie and what it's about, that, that family bond, is just on a whole other level of so many different movies. And I really hope that this movie is appreciated in the way it deserves, because that, that is, like you say, when you talk about recommending it to someone, it, like, the reason why I love sci-fi is movies like Interstellar, because they have a sci-fi backdrop to tell a fundamentally just human story. And that's why I think that movie is so good. And for me, like, say, what you just said completely nails it. Of, like, this is completely a genre movie. It is a horror movie. It is a post-apocalyptic movie about a creature. You know, it's a creature feature.
A terrifying movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this movie is tense from start to finish. It's just not to underplay the horror of this movie.
No, but then at its core, it is an emotional family drama. And that is, like, not a dig or anything. It's just like, no, this is a very heartwarming movie. And I just thought that was to be absolutely insane. I'm super happy as well that kind of the early estimates of this movie is that it's doing very, very well.
I don't know if we talked, it's a reasonably about small budget, isn't it?
Yes, it was 17 million and it seems to have already pulled in 71 million, 50 in America and then kind of 21 internationally. But I'm hoping that now the word of mouth is getting out, that a lot of people who saw this kind of week one are saying how good this is, that I do think it will hopefully carry on.
I hope it'll get legs.
This was one that I kind of, you know, we've been talking about how much horror there is at the cinema right now, and I was kind of thinking, like, I think I was saying to you off air, was like, I don't think there's a place or a role for a movie like It to do, you know, what It done last year, where, like, It was at a perfect time and a place. It came out when there was absolutely nothing on in the cinema. It had that really good, like, traction, that good word of mouth, and it nailed it. And that's why
it almost had like a month's hype and a month's tail.
Exactly.
Well, like,
it was a perfect storm
in this day and age. You know, when you think Marvel are putting out movies every 2 months, or Marvel and DC are, anyway, like, between the two of them.
Like, you, like, don't see
to find that,
perfect,
that lull is... Yeah.
You don't see that perfect storm for any movie, let alone a horror movie. And so, obviously, like you say, I still stand by that. I don't think any movie's going to do close to its numbers. But I think it'll be even hard to, like, say, look at what Get Out did last year. That made a lot of money. And I looked at this movie and I thought, wow, like, if you want to see a more chill-out horror movie, there's Truth or Dare. If you want to see something a bit more crazy, there was, of course, like, Annihilation and Unsane and all these different things.
And even, like, you got, like, you know, sequels like Strangers, Pray at Night.
Yeah,
you know, that's
exactly.
Be, you know, it's out in America. We'll get it eventually.
So I just think that it dilutes the market, and there's only, you know, we're obviously in the minority. We're people that go to see, like, a lot of movies, but a lot of people only have a certain amount of time or budget to see movies at the cinema. So I really, I thought this movie would come out and do okay, fine, and obviously the fact that it is such a good movie will help. But hopefully, like I say, I really hope this is one of the big, like, horror success stories of the year, like we saw last year, because I can't think of a more deserving movie for me personally.
Well, we're not going to stop talking about it.
No, we'll definitely be talking about this movie come the end of the year. There's another thing that's kind of interesting. You mentioned right at the start when we were talking about the creatures, the kind of the Cloverfield feeling of this movie. It's definitely something that we talked about as soon as we saw it, and... We are absolutely not alone in that.
Really? I wondered if that was the case.
I saw a few people mention it on Twitter and I was like, oh, that's funny. And then the writers have come out and said that this was absolutely a conversation that was had with them.
Really? Fantastic.
So this is a fairly long quote. I'm not sure I'll read all of this, but they were basically talking about when they were selling it to Paramount. They said that when they spoke to one of the representatives, that was a possibility. But it was weird timing, because when they were writing the script, 10 Cloverfield Lane has like just come out.
Right.
And so they were talking about that, and they were basically saying, like, we could see this as maybe a crossover, we could see this taking place in that universe, but ultimately they basically went on to say that they were not, they had a fear, and not that they don't love, you know, what Bad Robot do and what the Cloverfield movies do, but they had a fear that they didn't want it to be repurposed, because they felt that the movie on its own was so strong, the world that they'd built and all of this different stuff with the characters, that it didn't need, I guess, quote unquote, to be a Cloverfield movie. And,
agree with that. Much as, like, I love Cloverfield or want cool shit in that universe, I think that this has built its own lore. Like I said before, the post-apocalyptic world that they've built, I want to see more of.
Yeah.
I didn't need it to be a Cloverfield world.
Yeah, definitely.
Cloverfield World needs that more than this movie needs Cloverfield.
Oh, 100%, yeah. they basically were saying as well that as film goers, they kind of crave new and original ideas. And yeah, pretty much everything right now is part of an IP, whether it's comic books, remakes, yeah, sequels, all that sort of stuff. And they were really happy that they wanted to just put out something that was original and fresh. And they're really happy that at least the, you know, Paramount did embrace that. And I mean, look, this is what you get at the end of the day.
Yeah. I would also say that the monster, you know, the creature design is inspired by Cloverfield, yeah, but is not just those monsters. You know, this creature design I think is fantastic. You know, you get introduced to these creatures kind of throughout the movie, obviously, and they're terrifying, and they're just these killing machines, and it's almost like Cloverfield crossed with Tremors. Like, you know, these things are just like straight up killing machines, and they're basically this head that is just like a sea of eardrums, basically, that can just like detect any sound, and kind of at any point it can kind of amplify sound and seek out sound from any point. And like, you know, it seems like, you know, very Cloverfield inspired, very Tremors, but also just like very, you know, like almost Resident Evil, you know, monster design and that sort of thing. Just like something truly terrifying and really unique. It just took the best bits of like all cool stuff that I like and made something awesome, which I really appreciate. And it's definitely not a ripoff of anything, just, you know, perfect kind of levels of everything.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, do we want to mention a few things that are slightly spoilery?
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I necessarily need to. It's up to you.
There was one element which I guess is I wanted to discuss because I thought that they just nailed it, which again I didn't get from the trailer, and again I don't know if this was revealed in other stuff, but so this is like a little bit kind of mild mid spoilers. It's nothing towards the end of the movie, but kind of, you know, Emily Blunt's character throughout this the majority of this movie is pregnant, and just
I think this has been revealed in TV spots and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Because I've heard someone talk about a couple of scenes in this movie that hasn't seen this movie. So I think it has been revealed.
Yeah, that's what I assumed. But yeah, obviously I didn't
particular that we're not going to spoil.
I didn't know this going in.
No, me neither.
You know, as soon as they reveal it in such a fantastic way, and it's after such a poignant scene, again, the subtlety of this movie, there's so many little things. Like, I can't wait to go back and rewatch it because I'll notice how much they nail all these little things. You know, they set up things early on that they bring back perfectly.
Oh, I'm going to find a way to watch this again in the cinema. Like, it's happening.
Let's go tonight. But yeah, so like when they reveal this, it's kind of like you're initially thinking so many things in your head as a viewer. Like, there's a lot going on, but I was kind of like, this is the perfect time bomb that this movie needed to ratchet up the tension even more, because it combines the two elements of what this movie is completely about. It's about the use of sound and the parenthood and the family.
And
that what is more, you know, poignant in that is having a character that's pregnant. And so I just thought that was absolutely perfect.
I think as well, like a lot of people that kind of first like hear that thought just think like, why the hell would they put themselves in that situation? But when you kind of realize the family dynamic and how kind of driven they are, they're like, we're not just gonna take the easy option in this world. Like, we want to have a life and we want to have a family, and our will to have a family is our will to survive
and to have and to have as much of a normal life as possible in this world.
And I think that was one of the things that I spoke about with you after the film, like, it was that it isn't just like, let's just batten down the hatches. Let's just live in an absolute underground shelter in darkness and just stay alive. You know, they're not waiting to last out these creatures. These creatures are going to be here for an unknown long amount of time, maybe forever, like who knows. And all they're trying to do is survive. Basically, we're no longer top of the food chain. We're an ant that's just getting squashed by everything. And they realize that they still have to live, and they want to give their children a quality of life. So they let their children, you know, in the trailer, you know, let their children play board games, teach them, let read to them, you know, give them, you know, a quality of life so they can have fun and play games, you know, because for them, you know, as parents, what's the point in looking after their children if the children are just miserable? So they make a point to try and make them happy as well in this movie. And I thought that was something that I hadn't really thought about going in, and that was really interesting, and you know, made it so much more genuine, I think.
Yeah, definitely. like I say, I think it's one of those things that even just the concept alone is fascinating. The concept of what happens when you introduce this character that is pregnant in a movie in a world where you can't make sound. And obviously there are two major issues with that. You know, the first one is the act of childbirth in itself. And then the issue of when you have a newborn child, you can't immediately tell them.
They're pretty quiet,
you
right?
You can't be like, oh, you need to be quiet because these creatures are come get us. Like, no, that's not going to be a case. And so the way this movie deals with those two elements is just so well done. I keep saying it a lot because there are a lot of bloody good scenes in this movie, but it's one of the best scenes in the movie. The way it's shot, the way it kind of like pulls itself together, obviously, of course, I think it is the performance of Emily Blunt in these scenes is just so goddamn incredible, unlike anything I've ever seen before. Kind of you know, this movie is a lot about like facial experiences, expressions and real just like guttural reactions, because you don't get that use of sound. You know, you don't get to just scream or cry or shout. You don't get any of those elements. You know, it is all through the face.
It's almost like when people talk about like comic books, you know, how they can portray that emotion without giving you the sound. And, you know, that's exactly what this movie's doing throughout, which I think is incredible. You know, like you say, the horror and pain that's etched on her face when she's not making a single sound is, you know, it really cannot be understated how well both of them perform in this movie.
Definitely, because it is like the opposite of what you see in most horror movies. Like, it's so easy to just be like, here's
something scream in your face. Yeah, exactly.
Here's something that's awful that's happening. Oh, every person's going to be running around. They're going to be screaming. They're going to be erratic. The whole, like, crying, screaming, shouting. And it's all, like, a lot of it is bad performances as well. And this movie is just, like, the complete opposite of that. It is pure subtlety and just so much control from everyone in this movie. You know, like you say, from John's performance, of course. I mean, he is the anchor of this movie in so many different ways. He's the character who anchors this movie. Of course, he is the man behind the camera as well. And it is one of those performances, both as a on-screen talent and behind it, where the combination of those two, like, I don't think I've seen anything like it before. Like,
I don't understand how you could be so good in both.
It's unfair.
It's like, dude, give other people a chance.
it genuinely is. You know, it's crazy, man. Like, it's such a good movie, and I think that when we see these movies that are this good, we're always worried about, you know, what happens if they do a sequel. I don't know, man. Like, I'm so high on this movie right now that I'd obviously be super excited if they said that they would have other entries. But, like, also the fact that they literally made, in my opinion, a perfect movie that, like you say, like a Don't Breathe, you know, let's just leave it at that, you know, similar to Get Out, let's just leave it at that. It's fine, you know. But, yeah, that's obviously for the future. I think definitely just enjoy this movie in the moment. Like I say, there's a lot to take your attention right now at the cinema, and please, people need to support this type of movie, because
if you're not in your car listening to this, driving to the cinema right now, then you're going to have to pause the show, get in your car, put us back on in the car, but then get off to the cinema. You need to go see this movie right now.
Like, do yourself a favor, you will absolutely love it. And like I say, the cinema experience absolutely adds. So don't just think, oh, it sounds like cool, but I'll get it when it's, you know, on demand or whatever. Like, you have to see this movie immediately. It's so good. Like I say, I don't want to stop talking about it, and I also want to see it again immediately.
Maybe I tell you what, let's watch it again, we'll review it again next week.
Let's do back-to-back episodes. We'll be talking about this a lot in December as well. I also wanted to just briefly add as well, because I was going to mention it last week, but like, I remember the start of this year being like a little bit depressed, covering some of these movies for the show, because we had a really shit run in February, where we saw kind of Keep Watching, Hellraiser Judgment, and like Victor Crowley. And, you know, it was so disappointing, where I genuinely thought, like, man, last year was such a good year for horror. And I worried that it was, like, this, you know, crazy out-of-the-blue type thing of, like, oh, yeah, and now suddenly we just go back to crap again. And, you know, we had a few movies, we had a few decent movies. And then, like, kind of after, like, Annihilation and Unsane, I was, like, way more
Ghost
high.
Stories.
Yeah, and Ghost Stories. Like, those were our last three movies that we covered prior to this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are three movies that I absolutely, like, really, really enjoyed. And so I was already going to say, you know, oh, I'm in a way better place about this year now for the genre. And then we see this movie as well.
Oh, I'm like skipping to the cinema for the next movie. Like, I'm just absolutely pumped at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm already like, oh man, like 2017, screw you.
Yeah.
We've got a quiet place now. But yeah, it's insane. Like I say, not enough good things can be said about this movie. So yeah, that was our review of A Quiet Place. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back. So yeah, there's just one game that I played in the last week that I just wanted to briefly mention, because it's one that we've kind of talked about initially on the show before. This current season of Batman. So season 2 of Telltale's Batman, The Enemy Within. Have you just played episode 1 still at this point?
Yeah.
So,
killed me.
Obviously, episode 5, the last episode, came out, and I played through that. Definitely ends on a high. I would say it was quite easily my favorite episode. There wasn't like a single part of it that I didn't enjoy, and it was kind of, oh man, it almost annoyed me in a way, because I was like, you've now left this in a good place where I actually want more of this. It's two things. It's, I want more of this, but I don't want this now. I want this in 2 to 3 years, because I think that what they've done is really cool. I think their take on so many different things. I think obviously last season, it kind of, the Wayne history and their spin on that was really cool. And this season, the place we've got to, you know, without going into spoilers, but this season is about the relationship and dynamic between Batman and the Joker. And it's something that I haven't seen before, that portrayal of kind of like, they are more like friends, and even though they have completely different views on things, they do see a lot in common with each other.
Well, they are so similar in their views, really. You know, just one of them took, you know, they got to a crossroads at one point, and one went left, one went right, but they traveled on the same road for an amount of time.
Yeah. And this game does that really well. Like, it was my frustrations throughout the whole season was that it does a lot of fairly typical Telltale things of, like, a lot of characters are extremely annoying throughout, and in the last season they, like, basically say sorry and they try and get you forgiveness. And that's something that happens a lot of these times where, like you say, you're trying to be their friend and they just don't want to have none of it. Again, without going into spoilers, but yeah, Gordon is like one of the ones, like Gordon and Waller, the way they use both those in the season, where they're just like, they're just so annoying to you at all times. And like I say, I'd got to the point of playing this where I was just like, screw everyone. Like anyone who's not Batman, Catwoman or Joker, I'm just going to like, I'll kill anyone. Like, I literally don't care.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken that stance since day one with this. So.
And it was a shame that the game didn't give me more agency, because I wanted to screw people more and I wanted to mess with them, and like I always took those options, and you get some funny stuff that happens with the dialogue, but it was a shame that I couldn't be more of the Batman I wanted to be, because in the end they do kind of put you down the path of trying to be their Batman, which is a bit of a shame. But like I say, it ends in a good place. I think that this season was unnecessary this quick, and it feels completely rushed, but it's still good. Like, it's still good.
I mean ultimately the problem is, I think Batman is the interesting part of this, and obviously they've done a good Batman story.
Yeah.
But Batman is inherently interesting, and then telling a good Batman story is super interesting. I want them to make a video game. You know?
Yeah.
You look at even something like Life is Strange, or you know, something along that line. You can tell a story in a video game, but gamify it a little bit more, and just kind of have it less janky and less just dull, which is the problem I find. Like, I'm just almost like, just give me a 20-minute cartoon, like just an anime. Just give me a 20-minute anime, like 6 20-minute episodes, and I don't need a 2-hour, you know, Telltale game, because it's not, I don't want to call it a video game, because I really at this point just don't feel like they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten even softer on that part. You know, there is the kind of the quick time events as Batman, and that's
the detective stuff for me. I'm like, oh dude, I don't care.
Yeah, at least,
like,
there isn't a huge,
tell me what the crime
that,
is,
which
yeah.
is good. It is kind of just conversations and then fighting as Batman at this point, so they've even limited it even more.
Yeah, good, because I did feel with episode 1, it was more of season 2, it was more streamlined, which is good, because season 1 just really got me down, where it's like, oh, there's a scene, you must inspect this barrel and go over here and look at this blood and put a line to this thing and then a line to this thing, and I was like, oh no, just kill me now.
Yeah, they're an interesting company, because obviously this season's finished now, and we don't know what's going to happen with Batman, but they've obviously, then the next thing that they've just started talking about is the final season of The Walking Dead. which is going to start this year. And then of course they announced that they're going to be finally doing more Wolf Among Us, and that was kind of like them saying, like, we're doing these three projects now and that's it, like we've yeah. scaled down. And fingers crossed that the worry is we're gonna have to get through, I think, all of Walking Dead and all of Wolf Among Us before they'll even remotely start to look at their engine and stuff like
that's fine, I just won't play any of them. I mean, I've got the superhero game that I want on the way.
Oh yes,
we have a date, that's all I need.
Thank God for that. Everyone get hyped for September 7th because Spider-Man PS4 is arriving. Very, very excited for this one. Like, like we obviously talked about this a lot off air, so we're not going to talk about it loads here, but like, very excited for this game, and it's one that we'll probably have to end up talking about because, yeah, hopefully it's going to be very, very awesome.
Oh, I'm to the point where I'm going to have to book time off work to play this. Like,
I've already
done
it.
That's how pumped I am for it. Where I'm like, and I've not done that for a game for years, but that's how pumped I am for this game.
Yeah, it looks so good. I can't wait. So, yeah. That's going to be good. Like you say, these big releases now, these big Sony releases are finally happening, so it's cool that we're finally getting them.
They're happening all the time.
Yeah. I mean, what E3 conference was that? That was 2016, wasn't it? When they had, like, all that mental stuff on the stage.
It wasn't
last year, was it? It was the year before.
No, last year was when we saw that again. Yeah, it was 2016.
Because it was like, obviously, a lot of those we've got, Resident Evil, Crash, and those ones. But then, yeah, it was literally like, here's Death Stranding, here's, you know, Last of Us was later on. But like, all these big releases, obviously,
Days Gone.
Yeah, Days Gone, still not here. Like, God of War just around the corner. So yeah, it's going to be cool to finally play all these games.
So that was it.
That's all we've already been playing this week. We are back at the cinema again.
And another one we're pretty excited for.
Yeah, exactly. It's cool. Like, this is good. It's better than, like, oh, what random movie can we find on Shudder?
What Lin Chey movie are we going to watch?
Because, Truth or Dare is another big cinema release, one with another fun trailer attached to it. This is a Blumhouse one. They've been on a very good roll the past sort of 18 months, I'd say. This is a completely different style for what we've talked about with The Quiet Place, such a emotionally raw movie. I'm glad that we're getting a more fun horror movie. Hopefully it'll capture that kind of fun of Happy Death Day.
This feels more like a quintessential popcorn horror.
I'm looking forward to it. That's cool.
I need this after A Quiet Place. I couldn't handle another movie like A Quiet Place again, because I'm just gonna be watching A Quiet Place constantly.
Plus, I just don't have it in me, dude. Like, I'm still tired from that movie.
Me too.
But yeah, that was episode 91, where we of course talked about the fantastic A Quiet Place, which is available in cinemas now. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Soon enough anyway, shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could I stop?